This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're looking now at an aspect of the Ukraine conflict, not driven directly, but certainly vulnerable to, and that is famine, food security along North Africa, especially the Horn of Africa. There is said in the news to be a grain ship headed to Ethiopia in some fashion in these last hours. Why? Because Ethiopia is out of time and out of place. The expectation is that Ethiopia is struggling with a drought and with famine and with flooding altogether. The ship carrying grain from Ethiopia, United Nations chartered with 23,000 metric tons. In the meantime, the geopolitics of Ethiopia have not been settled. Gregory, it's been some weeks since we updated. And right now, the war is not getting the top headline. Instead, the famine. What is happening with the conflict with the breakaway parts of Ethiopia? I'm speaking especially of the liberation fronts. Have they calmed down or quieted down because they're all struggling with the drought and the famine?
Well, there's certainly been an impact on the internal wars because of the famines and the economic issues. The Tigray Popular Liberation Front has been hamstrung severely, despite efforts by the United States to get them resupplied so that they could continue their separatist war against the federal government in Addis Ababa. But so the TPLF is still fighting, but less so. But the Oromo Liberation Front and their various associates have escalated their fighting, and particularly against the Amhara people and against people who profess to support the Federation of Ethiopia, the historical empire of Ethiopia. The Oromo Liberation Front want a separate Oromia, and they've encroached on a lot of neighboring lands over the recent decades, and are claiming to liberates places which have a lot of non-Oromo people. And they've been killing Amhara people at an enormous rate, at a genocidal rate and with genocidal intent. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has been in an awkward position because he heads the Oromo political movement, which is now part of the national government. And he is half Oromo himself and half Amhara. And the Amhara think that he's under the sway of the Oromo, which he is, obviously, because he's head of an Oromo party. And the Oromo extremists don't trust him because they think he's half Amhara and therefore not representing their interests. But recently, with some incredible killings of Amhara civilians within the Oromia areas, the Prime Minister became absolutely pushed over the edge and said that he would now eliminate and destroy the Oromo Liberation Front. But we haven't seen any action on that subsequently, and we are seeing a continued escalation in the killings of Amhara peoples, which is tragic because, let's face it, the Emperor Haile Selassie, who is regarded mostly by the Oromo as being an Amhara, in fact was born in the what's now the Oromo region near the city of Hara, and that's now under control of Oromia, but it's also predominantly Muslim, and the great Muslim leader of Ethiopia, the Sultan of the Afar people, who's if you like a subordinate king under the emperor in the old days, the Sultan is very much supportive of the restoration of the Ethiopian crown to restore this sense of unity and national thinking and get away from this separatist and essentially racist and quite often genocidal thinking of the Oromo Liberation Front and the Tigray Popular Liberation Front and the like.
The story then in Ethiopia has not improved even slightly, as I understand it. Are the Europeans still convinced that removing Abiy or that the government in Addis Ababa is the problem, or has that story changed too because of the famine and the drought?
Yes, that argument has changed, and that argument only existed because the State Department, the U.S. State Department, which was very supportive of the TPLF, which is a Marxist terrorist group, the U.S. support of the TPLF led the U.S. to push the Europeans into opposing the national government under Abiy. Now, the Europeans have said enough, enough, and they've gone back to supporting Abiy. They're putting money in behind him. They're putting a lot of the food aid into the country. And Abiy has been very assiduous in attempting to rebuild the Ethiopian agricultural sector, despite the current drought and so on, which is caused by a rather longer than usual expression of the La Nina climate pattern, which really led to the drought and led to also to some of the flooding. But it's over the irony of that. But in the meantime, what we have seen is a massive increase in the domestic output of wheat and other grain crops in Ethiopia, to the point where they're literally a couple of years away from becoming self-sufficient in grain stocks. And this is a profound change. In the meantime, they still need these short-term supplies from Russia and Ukraine and elsewhere in the world, and that's resumed. So things are going to start to get better. But because of the Russia-Ukraine war, we did see this big interruption in the Horn of Africa, and as well as in Egypt and Sudan and the like, in food supplies. So we've got a short-term problem with starvation to a degree. Even in Ethiopia now, where my colleague Prince Hermias Haile Selassie, is there trying to organize some support for the local population. He said that, yes, there are food supply shortages. There are shortages in the supply of cooking oil, which is largely palm oil, which had been coming from Indonesia. But the outlook is somewhat optimistic.
We go to Nigeria, Abuja, Nigeria. This from the Voice of America in these last hours. Nigerian authorities say the country's inflation rate jumped to nearly 20% in July, compared to last year, the highest in nearly two decades. Consumers in Africa's biggest economy are struggling to keep up with rising prices for basic foods. I believe you're headed to West Africa, and Nigeria's governance right now it is challenged by this inflation rate. At the same time, this is a resource-rich nation selling oil at the premium price. So what is the discord here?
Well, oil and gas are no longer the main drivers of the Nigerian GDP. They are important in terms of foreign exchange earnings, but the economy is becoming more and more diversified, but also more and more troubled, particularly for the last 7 years of the 8-year two double terms of President Muhammadu Buhari. We see that things are going from bad to worse. Life expectancy is declining again, although it's still, had been rising progressively. The deficit in the Nigerian economy has gone up to provide a foreign debt in the region of something like $80 or $90 billion at this point. So that's clearly hampering the situation, because when the elections take place in February next year and there will be a new president, that new president is going to inherit a diabolical economic situation, which means that most of the funds available to that new government will have to go on debt servicing and trying to stabilize the internal war, which the Buhari government has allowed to not only escalate, but to move out of the northeastern areas and into much of the north and other parts of Nigeria. It's a dire security situation there now, and it's going to get a lot worse.
And the inflation, that is being driven by the government spending, by the shortfall, by supply chain. Is there one driver, Gregory? We have about a minute.
I don't think there's any single driver. The whole economy has been tanking, and the government has just been spending dramatically. In the $110 or so billion they spent in the last 7 years in government spending, most of it has gone on to just pumping money into the economy, and only a small percentage of it has gone into infrastructure development. So it's been the government spending in all the wrong places and just pumping money into the economy generally, which has led to this level of inflation, which is, by the way, not unique to Nigeria. The global situation is contributing dramatically to this increase in inflation.
Do I say correctly, however, this is the most populous state and the one with the best and most bountiful resources and an education base that is vital. But I read from the Voice of America that 4 out of Nigerians live below the national poverty line. That is not a stable country then, Gregory.
No, it's not stable at this stage, but there's an increasing sense of Nigerianness about it. People who are just so angry that their country has been allowed to be plundered right. by politicians. And this particular president, Buhari, took corruption to new levels. And this is something which, of course, the candidates for the election next year are all promising to reduce. And I think pretty much all of them actually mean it.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher, Defense and Foreign Affairs. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.